My goodness, it's the Totally Football Show. Today, World Cup qualifying's deadline day of drama. Ireland make Wales blubber, but we don't have to cry for Argentina, while plans to make America great again scuppered by deciding game with Tobago being played on islands surrounded by big water, ocean water, which the US notoriously have trouble with. With 22 nations now through, we round up all the news, then park all of that till November and the playoffs, because here comes club football. Premier League drama from one end to the other. Liverpool have got no Mane, Palace have got no points, Stoke have got no chance away at Man City, or have they? We'll be discussing that. Plus, French news, Italian news, financial news, and your comments too. It's the Totally Football Show. Hey there, listener. Yeah. Hey, on the show today, I'm so happy to welcome back Julien Laurent.
Hello, James. Hello, everybody. Thank you for having me.
No, it's a pleasure. You don't sound happy.
No, I'm so happy to be here.
Okay, let me try even more. Wow, we've got James Horncastle here.
Well, again?
That's right.
Right. And how about this for a mystery ingredient? Dr. Tom Markham.
Hello, everyone.
Yes, Dr. Tom. A man, Jules, whose CV would make even Citroën jealous.
Really?
You know,
Yeah.
Dr. Tom over there, he's too modest to tell you this himself. He is the first person in the UK to have a PhD in football finance. Is that true?
Very true.
He understands FFP. Is that true?
Yes.
Oh, wow. He advised on Yunyi's takeover of West Brom and Landa Sports acquisition of Southampton. Correct?
I did.
Busy guy. Oh, he also invented, I know you'll like this, the Markham multivariate model, Jules.
Nice.
MMM. As we call it, which has been used in the majority of football club sales in recent years. And by day, you help make Football Manager. You help keep Ian McIntosh out of trouble, basically.
I do. I keep Ian off the streets.
Well, you're also a film producer, Dr. Tom.
I am a film producer. But no, something that's been mentioned on the show previously, I think it was Philippe who brought it up, Philippe Auclair, the Kaiser film.
Yeah.
Carlos Kaiser, who managed to blag a 26-year football career despite being terrible at football.
What time is it, Kaiser? That was from that, isn't it? You're all these things and more, Dr. Tom. But right now, first and foremost, you, an Irishman. An Irishman who was at Cardiff, the big game.
I've just got my voice back. Fantastic evening there, lots of Guinness, brilliant away fans, and obviously the home fans were even better. They really took the defeat well, they bought us pints, they stayed out on Monday night, we had a great time.
They gave you pints and they gave you points as well.
Exactly.
The victory takes you through. How unexpected was the win?
Extremely unexpected. I think it was a massive gamble to give Martin O'Neill the new contract the week before, but that obviously paid off in terms of motivation. The game plan, there was only one real chance in that whole game, which was created by pressure. Great finish, but lacked a lot of quality. But it never really looked like Wales were actually going to score. And they needed the two goals. So, yeah, marching on to the playoffs.
You speak a little bit dismissively of tactics, but I thought Ireland set up really well to take Joe Allen out of the picture.
It was very, very physical, you're right. And I don't know whether that was necessarily strategic, but I think it worked out well from an Irish perspective.
Mm. All right. Wales had 80% possession before he went off in that kind of emerald sandwich. And James McClain getting the goal.
Great finish, right foot as well, which doesn't happen very often, and he obviously hit the corner.
Right. Who do you want in the playoff draw, which comes up next Tuesday?
We've had a lot of debate amongst this, and personally I'd like Switzerland.
Oh, right.
A lot of people are talking about Denmark, but I think Denmark have a little bit too much creativity. It's just discussing to Jules about the fact that Ireland usually win by the odd goals, so you don't want a team that can go and score three or four, because that'll be the end of it.
Switzerland, the only team not to qualify automatically, with 27 points. I mean, they won nine straight going into
Portugal. Nine straight, and then that defeat by Portugal. Good-looking Portugal side, actually. Italy, I believe, are in the playoff pot for Irish hands to pull out.
Yeah, and there's a lot of fear of drawing Northern Ireland, because, of course, the only time that Italy have not made a World Cup was in 1958, and they lost to Northern Ireland that time. So could history repeat itself? We'll have to find out when the draw is made.
And we have a situation that, with the seedings, that they haven't sold the World Cup rights in Italy yet. So obviously they're going to be seeded because they need to generate revenue, whereas in the case of the US, Fox Sports paid $425 million for the World Cup and had 350 hours allocated to show. So ironically, Mexico might save them from that perspective.
Well, that's extraordinary. So basically, America paid up front and don't get to go to the World Cup, but you're suggesting FIFA will do everything possible to make sure Italy gets through because they haven't as yet sold the rights for the World Cup.
Suggesting that, yes.
Wow, that's remarkable. It's quite late, isn't it? Even for the Italians not to have worked out who's going to be showing next summer's tournament.
Yeah, I imagine it'll be Sky Italia.
Mm, all right. Well, congratulations to Ireland. Commiserations to Wales. Big story, I guess, alongside Ireland at the weekend was the fact that Argentina, after all that collective wailing and gnashing of teeth about prospect of a World Cup without Leo Messi, went and rocketed up the table. Where did they finish in the end? Was it fourth?
Third.
Yeah. Wow.
Basically, they and Chile swapped places. I think Argentina was sixth going into this. Chile were third, and roles reversed.
Mm. And suddenly it all clicked into place. Did you stay up for the game, James?
I did, yes.
Yeah.
It was just incredible. I mean, to see, you know, Argentina go and play at that altitude against a side that I think they've only won once in 56 years against, go behind as they did so early. It was, I think, very reminiscent of that. Messi's performance was reminiscent of Ronaldo against Sweden. Yeah, it was that kind of, right, enough's enough. And completely took the game over. And yeah, I thought it was interesting. Di Maria afterwards saying the dwarf was fantastic. So, San Paoli making some curious comments afterwards, saying that football owes Messi a World Cup. Now, whether he means the trophy itself or just owes him being at a tournament,
I mean,
I don't know.
To be fair, yeah. Anything he says after an evening like that, he's just got to be.
His celebrations were amazing. Yeah, it was good to see him going crazy on the sidelines. But South American qualifying again, just the number of plot lines on that evening, you know, with the Venezuelan camp having prostitutes of sent in.
So this is Rafael Dudamel denouncing that Paraguayan girls of the night tried to basically debilitate his Venezuelan, but, you know, put the Venus in Venezuela, as it were.
And he praised their professionalism.
Yeah, well, Venezuela, I have to tell you, did score, but they came last on the bottom of the group. Yeah. Oh, that doesn't...
According to Claudio Bravo's wife, the Chilean players didn't need any girls sent to the... You know, to the hotel. Yeah, I think they spent quite a lot of time partying before the Brazil game.
Jules, I want to ask you about Argentina.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're a team with enormous pedigree. Recently, they've done very well without actually, you know, in competitions, without actually winning anything. But Sampaoli, with a little bit more time to whip them into shape, is this the team? Because somebody was asking us, who do we think is going to be dark horses of this World Cup? Seems crazy to call Argentina a dark horse, but could they be a major force next summer?
Yeah, I think they're favourite to win it with Brazil and Germany and France, probably.
Mm. Spain.
And Spain as well, yeah. Dark horses are more, I don't know, a team like Belgium, for example, because, like you said, with what Messi and Argentina have done, even if they haven't won anything, but two Copa Americas final, one World Cup final in a row, that's a lot of, okay, he couldn't deliver in the end, but it's still amazing, really, when you think about it. And we talked with James in the past how important when Antonio Conte was with Italy, the 4 weeks prior to the Euros 2016, how important that was for him to implement the philosophy he wanted the team to play with, especially with all the changes he made and the formation and the three at the back, etc. And for someone like Sampaoli, who is a very demanding coach, but also who is, you know, uses very complicated things in many ways, I think having your team, usually when you are a head coach for a national team, you get the players on the Monday, you have Tuesday, they can't really train, Wednesday they train, Thursday they train, Friday you're already the day before the game usually, so you don't have time. So those 4 weeks prior to any big tournament would be huge for anyone, you know, but
and
especially
for a manager with ideas like Sampaoli,
exactly,
with a collection
to be able
of players
to work,
that talented.
Exactly, to be able to work on how you press all together, or when you don't have the ball, what your fullbacks have to do, etc, etc.
And you can make the same argument, of course, for Martin O'Neill with the Republic of Ireland. James, I know you want to tell us about the extraordinary events elsewhere in the Central American qualifying group. A lot of people tweeting in, some not particularly pleasantly, with comments for poor George Qureshi, who had told us that they were going to pretty much beat Trinidad and Tobago. To be fair, the US could have drawn that game. It turns out they could even have lost that game against Trinidad and Tobago, and as long as there wasn't one specific combination of other results. But unfortunately, there was.
Yeah. I think there's a 93% chance America had of coming through and qualifying. And they blew it. And they blew it against what the team that was bottom of the table, a team that had lost six of their last six games. And I think this, to be honest, is one of the great stories about World Cup qualifying. It's like Panama, team that's never been to the World Cup before, to do it in the circumstances in which they did, with a ghost goal, with a team that I think had come close before. All of these players are like over 30. So it's not like there's some kind of new generation coming through. It's a team that has tried and tried and failed and has now kind of succeeded. And just to see some of the scenes of that night where you see the ball boy... Yeah. Rushing up and kicking the ball to help with the time wasting. You see the president of the country calling, was it yesterday now, a national holiday, signing a decree. It's magnificent.
Yeah. So basically, America, US lost against Trinidad and Tobago, and we should salute Alvin Jones, second goal in that game. It was his first ever goal, I think, for Trinidad and Tobago. Huge goal. Then Honduras won 3-2. Against the already qualified Mexico, who I'm sure were really busting their gut. Here's Grant Thomas saying USA's last chance of qualifying for the World Cup came down to a Mexican free kick that's blocked by a wall.
Ooh.
Irony, yeah. Claxon. Amongst other people commenting, there was this: I've not been in better spirits. This is the happiest day of my life. Who said that? Jack Warner, the former CONCACAF chief.
Nice.
And as you say, Panama going through in the dying seconds, scoring there after that ghost goal earlier. Not that anyone sounded that bothered about that. Pandemonium, or as Kaiser Soze tweeted in, Panama demonium.
The Panamaniacs.
What do we make of the Colombia, Peru, Falcao controversy, if you want, where you tell the other team, listen, all the other results are going our way. If we keep this game as a draw 1-1, which it was at the time, we both go through. You will have to beat the New Zealanders, but when it's down to football and not rugby, it's okay. And we go through, are you happy? We're happy, everybody's happy, and then you stop playing. Yeah, exactly. Is it cheating? I've got nothing against it.
Well, it's game management.
It could have been a bit more discreet, maybe, because clearly the way they did it, it was like...
Sweet, hey, hand over his
boy, Sweden and Denmark. Yeah, but he went to see every single Peru player individually and say, hey, listen, it's, you know, it was maybe Radamel should be a bit more clever next time.
Stuff he learned in France.
What do you think, Tom?
I'm not sure. I think that part of the world, obviously... Things like this happen all the time, and obviously you have potential issues with the likes of
Unlike
Honduras.
Unlike in, say, Europe.
Yeah, where even the Nordic countries get involved.
Or Germany, or Italy.
If you want to come back on this podcast, the Italians are doing everything right.
I think you're confusing this with another podcast.
I'm going to give Falcao a pass on this, because like Falcao missed the last World Cup. Because he suffered that dreadful injury, the knee injury, in January.
Yeah.
So he didn't get to go. And then again, David Ospina tried everything to stop Colombia going to the World Cup in this like international fortnight. Arsenal fans, if they were watching this, they must be horrified by some of the saves he wasn't making. Give Falcao a break.
To be fair, it wasn't the worst thing that we saw this weekend. I think that honour would have to go to Tim Cahill, who, after securing Australia's passage with that, what was it, 119th minute goal against a tremendously technically gifted Syria, then did that revolting kind of sponsored goal celebration.
Mm. Right. But he does have that incredible record of 26 of his 50 international goals are headers. I mean, that's
pretty good.
More than 50% of headers.
He scored both of these headers.
Yeah.
We should also salute Iron Robin. Quite touching scenes, really, no? I mean, he was a brave stab at getting the, what was it, seven goals that they needed, Netherlands, the other night? The second one, oh my goodness. Oof. We've talked before about goals that you've not seen before. I'm not sure if I've ever seen anyone score a goal like that before.
Well, just also the speed with and the power with which he hit that.
Could you describe it, James?
Well, it kind of... I mean, I don't...
The ball comes in from the left,
and, it comes,
and he just meets it first time with this remarkable... It would be hard enough to do with that much swaz on a free kick if you'd actually set and prepared yourself and done your little stunts and breathing exercises. But he does
it's
all
It's almost
that.
Like a penalty.
Yeah.
So, yeah, because he waits for it to come in, and he's got no kind... He doesn't run onto it, or he doesn't... Yeah, it just comes straight in. He gets it out of his feet with just a complete...
I mean, the bend on that, I mean, it's like the tournoi Roberto Carlos.
Yeah.
Yeah. Robin. Anyway, that's the last we'll ever see of him on international football.
He had a lovely line after this. He said, the glass man...
Oh, lasted. A comment, right, thank goodness. Yeah, go on.
The glass man lasted longer than all the others. Because, you know, they always said he was too fragile, he'd break, right. And, you know, he outlasted some of the other players in his generation.
We haven't mentioned anything about Iceland.
Well, that's so true. We did speak to our friend Stefan on Monday, who assured us they were going through and that they wouldn't have a problem against Kosovo.
Yes.
And they didn't, and they're through. So consider that box ticked. Loads of other teams are through. I'm sure you've seen which ones are there. John, there's loads of questions about World Cup qualifiers, actually. We'll try and bang through some of these before we move on to club football, because it was... International football can be a bit... It's not always the most dramatic, but this weekend was a really vintage set of games. Ross, can the pod please discuss the Big Sam for Scotland suggestions during the rounds? Have you heard about this, Big Sam, Scotland?
Because his dad is Scottish, isn't he?
Is that right?
Yeah. I think it's a terrible idea. I
mean, why is it a terrible idea?
Who would want to appoint Sam Allardyce as a country? Was I don't understand
England.
The...
Well,
exactly.
Sure,
England made a big mistake. Thankfully, he obviously blew it himself and they were so happy to get rid of him. I don't see the first. Club football, maybe if you're towards the bottom of the table and you're like Crystal Palace and you think, okay, you know, he can help us. But national team football, Scotland have a good generation, I think,
Jules,
coming
if
through.
If his name was Sam Allardyce, something like that, you would be...
He wouldn't be French. I'm not a big fan, and I think Scotland can do better than him.
I disagree. I think that type of manager is actually better suited to international football because they can work with the sum of their parts, and it doesn't matter how bad, you know, a selection process or a team is available, they can actually work with it. Whereas there's other types of managers that need to buy in the players that play the way that they want to play.
Plus, he's Big Sam, and you know, with the genetics issue they have, if he could just propagate.
I think they've got an interesting squad, not to win the World Cup or Euros, but I think they've got an interesting squad that doesn't fit the kind of football he plays.
Mm. Colin Williams, not to ignore your point, but Colin Williams says, could his country possibly prize Sir Alex Ferguson out of retirement into a part-time job? I don't know, Colin, but that's an interesting shout. Lee Madden, this was the question, who are the dark horses for next year's World Cup? We mentioned Argentina. Anybody else you want to throw in there, Dr. Tom?
The one very left-field one, I'm going to say, is Russia. Given the political connotations that you never know what will happen there. And I actually have a sneaky punt on them at 50-1.
Do you? To get how far?
Each way.
Yeah. to be in the final?
Well, you've all seen Icarus. You've all seen, you know, what happened
at Sochi.
You've all
seen South Korea in the South Korea-Japan.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, and there's a lot more influence in Russia than there was in South Korea, let's face it. So, yeah, I don't want it to happen, but I wouldn't be surprised if something like that did happen.
In this day and age, Dr. Tom, I'm taking
So far,
your point.
Dr. Tom has clearly angered FIFA, you know, for not selling the rights to Italy first. Yeah. The Italians, calling them cheaters. Mm-hmm. Now Russia saying that they completely, you know... It's like,
I can ask him about France next, Jules. Yeah. That's a little bit later on.
I was there at that game and I'll never forgive him.
I was there too, but I don't know which game you're talking about.
David Clark, if one assembled a squad from all the players from countries who didn't qualify for the World Cup, how well do you think they would do in the World Cup? Well, I think brilliantly, because they'd be so motivated, no? Yeah. I mean, what a lineup. And a lot of news outlets and papers and stuff have actually put together... 11s of players who won't be going. They really should do this. And in actual fact, ice hockey once again leads the way in this because who was pointing out? Oh, yeah, Port of Brandon. I couldn't remember where it was. The 2016 Ice Hockey World Cup, they had a best of North America team and a best of Europe team of all the players who were representing essentially countries that hadn't made it. Yeah.
Like an all-star game.
Like an all-star, but within the actual context of the World Cup. Fantastic.
That is cool.
I like that.
Yeah. Get on that. FIFA.
We've said a lot, it would be cool, for example, to take, I don't know, six leagues.
Yeah.
So the top five, the big fives, and maybe Portugal. You had Portugal, and you do their best 11. So they're all star for each, and then you do like a little tournament, the six of them, and see, you know, see who wins. Uh-huh. So you'll have the best Serie A, the best Liga, the best Premier League, blah blah blah, and then you see
who would win. Jules,
La Liga.
Do you reckon
Liga would win? No, maybe. Okay, maybe La Liga.
All right. Tom, what do you think?
I think that's a great idea. I wouldn't be giving that away publicly. You should go and speak to someone about that.
If only we had a football and finance expert right here in the pod. Okay. Interestingly, Jules Joe has a question of a similar nature. He says, South American 11 against the European 11. Who would win? I'm going to keep asking this until you've answered, because it sparked a debate at my work.
Right, okay. I like this a lot.
Oui.
So we would have Messi and Neymar in the same team, for example, obviously.
Well, Cavani.
And Cavani as well, maybe, or Suarez. So you can imagine
Aguero,
the MSN.
Ibarra,
they were just so
reunited. Reunited.
Gabriel Jesus.
And then you have, I think probably defensive. I would go for Europe. Defensively stronger than the South American team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't think defensively Argentina, even Brazil, especially in the fullback positions.
Mm.
Even Godin and Uruguay not defending the way they used to, maybe. So that point, but going forward, surely South America will be pretty, pretty good. So
there you go. There's your
answer. I go for a draw,
Joe.
4-4.
Huh? 4-4.
The draw, yeah.
Okay, so nobody would win. Nobody would win. All right then, James, you got something you want to throw in there, or shall I just
move on? Move on.
All right, move on. We will then, because we've got loads more questions coming up later on in the show. But I just have to talk to you about Liverpool Man United, and we'll do that after this.
Running a small business is hard. It can take weeks to set up a meeting with the bank, who will then charge all sorts of fees for their business services. But Tide is different. It's a new nimble banking service which will save small businesses like yours time and money. It takes just 3 minutes to get started with Tide, and you'll get a UK sort code, an account number, and a company MasterCard. Tide also provides automated bookkeeping and an invoice assistant, and it works seamlessly with all major accounting software like Xero, Sage and QuickBooks. So head to Tide.co and enter the promo code TOTALLY to get 6 months of free money transfers. After that, your account becomes pay-as-you-go. There are no monthly fees ever. That's Tide.co and the promo code TOTALLY. Tide, the current account your business deserves.
Premier League. Club football's back. So it's that weird thing, isn't it? When club football stops, you're like, oh. And then when it comes back in, you're so caught up in the other narrative that you're a little bit, oh, as well. But luckily, Premier League returns, and indeed, leagues around Europe return with some really banging fixtures. Huge.
Yeah.
Italy's games this weekend. Ooh. Ridiculous.
Yeah, lovely scheduling as well, so you can watch them all.
Yeah.
Watch them all. Fantastic.
Well, we'll talk about, four of the top five, six of the top seven going against each other. But in the Premier League, the big story is Liverpool against Man United. And sub-editors across the land typing out their no Mane, mo problems headlines after Sadio Mane, 89th minute of Senegal's game with Cape Verde, picks up a hamstring problem. Everybody knows that Liverpool struggle without him. What's it going to mean this time?
It means that you move Coutinho a bit higher on the pitch. But we would have liked to see if Klopp would have had the cojones to play the four of them together, Coutinho, Firmino, Mane and Salah. The problem for him, though, as well as the injury for Mane, is that Firmino and Coutinho have to travel back, are travelling back, as we're recording this, from South America, from Brazil, all the way. And it always causes problems to everybody. I mean, Falcao can play with Monaco on Friday evening because he would only come back on Friday morning. Cavani might not play for PSG on Saturday. And it would be the same for Klopp. He would have to think, okay, they've travelled 15 hours and they've just arrived literally yesterday. Can they play tomorrow in such a big game? And I think if you've lost already money, you've got Firmino and Coutinho, who, like we said, spend so much time flying back.
When do they get back?
So I think they come back Thursday night or early Friday.
Mm. Not ideal, is it, for the early kickoff on Saturday? In tactical terms, about how Klopp deals with Mane being out, when he went to the Africa Cup of Nations last year, they had one win in seven in all competitions, which, just as it happens, is their current record as well. But, of course, last year they didn't have the pace of Oxlade-Chamberlain to put into the side. They do now. Surely this is the time to play that particular card.
To unleash the Ox.
Unleash the Ox. Isn't that right?
As we all know, that Liverpool have a very good record against the top teams, at least when they've got 11 men on the field. We saw them got taken apart by Man City despite starting that game well. But then again, United don't play like the other top teams, or at least haven't.
How do Man United play? Because right now, they are entertainers.
Oh, they are entertainers, and it would not be a surprise if they scored four at the weekend. But at the same time, United, when they go into big games, and this is a test for Jose Mourinho as well, because this was one of the question marks about United last season, was how they do against top six. They seem to be very negative. And didn't seem to have much of a game plan besides stopping their opponents playing.
Mm.
Now, obviously, that's changed with the acquisitions that they made in the summer and how they've been playing up until to now. But I don't think it'll change Mourinho's approach going into this game. I think he'll want to play like he did last year when they went to Anfield and got a point. They only had, I think, 34% possession, which was the lowest, I think, of a United side since Opta's records began. And just deny the space in behind for players like Salah. Liverpool are the team that have scored the most goals on the fast break this season. But again, it will be, as Jules says, something where they'll probably have to look at Coutinho to be able to break this team down, not only with his passing, but also shooting from distance.
Does he do that much?
I've seen him do it quite a few times, yeah. But and United also, yeah. I mean, this it could become quite a tight and cagey affair. This, I mean, I remember the build up to
Red
this
Monday.
Game, Red Monday,
yeah.
And it was a dry 0-0.
It was the worst,
yeah.
It was the worst
because
game.
Neither side kind of wanted the ball really, because obviously Liverpool don't want it because they want to counter on teams, and that was United's approach as well. So
all right, well, it's a United team that comes in without a key or two key players. Pogba was already injured. Now Fellaini picking up a problem with Belgium. How does that impact Dr. Tom on Moo's thinking?
I don't think necessarily Fellaini would have started that game. Mm-hmm. I don't know what the other views are here, but I think they have enough firepower, and obviously they've got a pretty tight defence as well. So Liverpool going forward, they're excellent. I think it could be 2-2, 3-3, that type of game. So fingers crossed it isn't what you've described. But it could be any score with the way United are playing and the way Liverpool can potentially defend at times. It literally could end up as anything.
I really hope you're right. It does sound chillingly realistic, that the scenario you outlined there, that Mu, who basically hasn't had a proper tough test yet
in
this
Real
season.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow. If you look at the average, Football 365 did the legwork here. They basically did a league table of the average league position of your opponents, who's had the easiest and the toughest fixtures. Toughest fixtures, actually, so far have been Everton and Crystal Palace, which maybe put some perspective on the trouble they've been having. But by far the easiest set of fixtures have been Man United. So the odds on Mourinho just going, we'll get in, get out and do a job.
And which means it's been the easiest fixture for Romelu Lukaku as well. Uh-huh. And the whole debate was, can he do it in the big games? Will he do it in the Champions League? And even in the Champions League, they played easy teams, really. So this is the one where we'll have to see. And again, like Dr. Tom said, it's against the Liverpool defence, not the strongest either. So he might well score, but I think the jury will still be out on him whether he can really deliver in those big games and lead the team.
Yeah, just one in his last seven games against Liverpool.
Is that right?
Yeah, but obviously that was
a good record at all
with Everton.
Yeah.
You've got the Everton factor, as well, which obviously.
Sure. Mm. I don't know. It's a game that could hold so many surprises. Oxlade-Chamberlain, who's certainly fresh, could be one of them. So
Well, you mean as a starter?
Yeah,
I don't think he'll start.
No?
I think without Mane, you almost go back to the. To the Liverpool before Salah arrived, but Salah will replace Mane, and you have Coutinho, right. Firmino, Salah, and then your midfield three with Henderson, Wijnaldum and Chan, for example, if everybody's fit and if everybody's ready to play. And then that's pretty much your strongest 11, considering Mane is not there. I don't think there's a room for Ox in there.
Will it be a good game, Julian?
No, I don't think so. I'm sorry, Dr. Tom, I'm more in Horney's camp. I think it will be the Mourinho's pragmatism will come back for that kind of game to make sure they at least don't lose it. And they might nick a win, but yeah, I think it'll be more cagey than spectacular.
On the occasion of Saturday's game, Liverpool will be renaming officially the Centenary Stand as the Kenny Dalglish Stand, which is nice for King Kenny.
We like the Dalglish family.
We do. One component of which will be joining us on Monday.
Good.
More when we know more. I'm ruling out Paul, though, because he's in Canada.
And the because Kenny had Paul and two daughters as well, and one of them lives in France.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. City, can Paul clear at the top if Man United do drop points at Anfield? Dr. Tom, City, Man City, are hosting Stoke. Ooh, Stoke held Man City to a 0-0 at the Etihad last season. No Joe Allen, perhaps, for Stoke after your boys...
battered him.
Had your job.
Yeah. Aguero's back in light training. Do you see much hope for Stoke in this? Are you that bothered?
I don't see too much hope for Stoke.
Okay.
I spent quite a lot of time in Brazil, actually, when Gabriel Jesus came through, and he looks absolutely phenomenal. I think he could be potentially one of the world's best strikers. So even if Aguero is, you know, in light training, they don't need to risk him in a game like this. So they seem to be cruising at the moment, City do. But the only hope for Stoke is that you have a couple of defensive errors there, which seem to be in City every so often. But
although they have kept a whole run of clean sheets, haven't they? I suppose one other factor in this might be whether Pep Guardiola does one of his usual rejigs of the starting lineup with a view to Napoli's visit on, what is that, Tuesday in the Champions League?
Yeah, exciting stuff. But the last time that Stoke went away and beat a team that was top of the table.
Did I have hair?
Was, I think you probably did. It was April 1972, James. And do you know who that was against? Manchester City.
No way.
Wow. Wow. An omen.
There you go.
Okay.
You did have hair then, didn't you?
In 72?
Yeah.
Very much so.
Do we expect at some point City to crumble like they did last season? So that incredible start and people were like, wow, they're going to finish unbeaten. They're so good. And then they crumbled. And it's been 7 games in the league, 2 in the Champions League, that's 9, 1 in the League Cup, I guess, maybe. That's 10. It looks very, in many ways, you could think, okay, let's see if they crumble again like they did last season. Although
stop
they look
saying crumble, Jules. You don't know what it's saying.
Crumbling.
I know. It's all right. You're French. You don't understand. You don't like fruit and puddings, bizarrely.
No,
otherwise,
I've
would
got
bring
an issue
you an apple
with British
crumble.
Yeah, with British patisseries.
All right. But to answer your question, actually, I don't want to answer your question.
No,
personally, I don't think they're going to do that again. I think this is a different
team. And do you know what? I remember
we're not here to hear my opinion.
Also,
James,
I think City are defending much better than they did last year. They've allowed their opponents only 45 shots, which is the lowest in the league.
Wow.
This is, again, something that I don't think you associate. Only 25 of which have been from open play as well, which would suggest that maybe Stoke's best chance will come from a set piece of some sort.
Last season was very similar. They were allowing not many shots, but Claudio Bravo was conceding a goal every shot he was facing.
Can I just throw in a little stat-esque at this point, which is when Football 365 did add up the average positions, the team that had the second easiest run of fixtures so far were
City.
Manchester City.
But you know what? I remember speaking to Bakary Sagna at the end of last season, and I know it's a bit easy now with a bit of a name dropping, but nothing much. I'm not crumbling, by the way. But no, and I know it's easy now, but he was talking about Pep and said Pep is a genius, everything we do at training is exceptional. Because he's 34.
No, seriously, was this with the mic on, or was he saying this off camera, as it were?
No, off camera, yeah.
Oh, yeah, so he genuinely feels that Pep's a genius.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
But he was also saying the moment they're going to click all together, so the moment they will all realise what they have to do, they will all do on the pitch what he asked them to do, the 11 that are going to play, they're going to be unstoppable. It says, if one day this Manchester City team, and whoever plays in it, so clearly he knew he was not going to be there, if that 11 plays exactly the way he wants them to play and they do what he wants them to do, no one will stop them and they will score 3 or 4 goals every single match. So it's what we're saying, let's wait
and see. Do you think they're going to crumble?
No, I don't.
Okay.
And I think they're much stronger, and I think he's clicked. And the left back position might be an issue at some point, and they might need someone else than Fabian Delph to play there.
Mm. Although Victor Moses at Chelsea last year.
Yeah, true. And I think Fabian Delph is underrated in the way that he's far more intelligent than people believe so. So I think he can maybe do a job there. But if you want to win everything, you need, I think, a proper fullback there.
Time will tell.
Yeah.
Jules, time will tell. Ian says, why does everyone focus on the Manchester clubs but ignore Spurs as serious challengers, despite them being the best team over the last two seasons? Well, yeah, Ian, that's a good point. And they have Harry Kane, who is the best goal scorer in the world right now, would you say, Dr. Tom?
I think the most efficient
striker in the world?
Kane is unbelievable because his finishing is just so precise, but he doesn't seem to have, when you look at him, he doesn't have pace, he doesn't necessarily have the physicality, he's not that good in the air. So you're sort of looking at him going, how is this happening? But he's just, you know, ruthless in terms of taking chances.
He's worked on his pace. Jules, was it you telling the story of the way that he's worked on his pace, though? And his explosivity.
That's it. And I think that's... because I think you can't... if you're not born with pace, you can't suddenly run the 100 metres from 15 seconds to 10. That's impossible. What you can gain, though...
unless you're born in Russia, maybe.
Maybe. And you take some, you know, like special cakes.
It's a big season.
But it's the first 2 yards where you can improve, and that explosivity, as you said, and he's done that, yeah.
Right.
You could see it anyway.
It's a big season for Spurs. Obviously, it's make or break, because I think some of the bigger players, if they don't do anything this year, and it's difficult in Wembley as well, that they are going to move on. They've done brilliantly to hold on to like the likes of Lloris. You see Real Madrid potentially knocking on the door for Kane, although that deal that was suggested was absolutely ridiculous. Even Daniel Levy would have been laughing if you're getting offered Modric, Benzema, and
what was the deal? Modric, Benzema,
and Bale
for what? Harry Kane.
Well,
and
this was tabloid talk. It was just for Kane. That was in the papers yesterday, and that cannot be true.
Dr. Tom, how much impact does the new stadium have on the way Spurs are operating, or is this just normal business policy for them?
It's fairly close to normal business. In terms of, they obviously have to pay rent now that they go to Wembley, but they do get extra ticket revenue. So they probably are making a little bit more out of being in the new stadium. Mm. But when they move into their new stadium, that will have a significant effect, because I think it's been designed. Match day, they might be making the guts of, on average, £4 million a match day, whereas at White Hart Lane, they were probably making £2.5 million.
All right. So if they can get through this period, do you think they will loosen the purse strings vis-a-vis salaries?
Potentially. I think salaries, Spurs have always been quite tight. I think Daniel Levy has been absolutely brilliant in terms of how he's managed the finances at that club, and he's always been able to squeeze every last penny out of players when they leave. You know, you look at the Berbatovs, you look at the Modrics when they left. The club were in a very poor position, but they still managed to get every last penny, a little bit like the Lyon situation. Yeah. So I think Levy will be cleverer, and ultimately they will spend a little bit more money, but they need to build on what they've created now. They have created momentum, and they need to just keep moving in the right direction.
Harry Kane's yet to score at Wembley in the league, although obviously he did for England the other day. Spurs facing Bournemouth at Wembley Saturday at 3 o'clock. Bournemouth with just one win so far, and apparently Josh King's injured.
Oh, and Defoe, his worst record against any club is against his former club, Spurs.
No.
Yeah, so there you go. Bournemouth, right. I don't think, have ever beaten Spurs in the league. I think they've only beaten them once in their history, which was back in the 50s in the FA Cup. So maybe Spurs will get their first league win in the
they also lost for like 5-1, 4-0 and 4-0 or something like that, Bournemouth, in the last two or three seasons. I think they had one draw 0-0 where Spurs had loads of chances, couldn't score them, but then the other time they were battered.
Kane has scored 6 goals in 3 games. Thanks, producer Ben. 6 goals in 3, that was, against the Cherries.
Yeah.
That's a lot of goals. How about this for a scary run of fixtures? Real Madrid away, Liverpool at home, West Ham at home, Man United away, Real Madrid at home. That's what Spurs have coming up.
Yeah, and that's what you want. You're there. That's what you're there for. That's why you want to be able to test yourself against those big clubs. Mm. Otherwise, there's no point. And I think if you're Harry Kane and Dele Alli and Christian Eriksen, you want to play those matches. You want to go to the Bernabeu and compete, not get beaten 2-0 or 3-0 or 4-0 or something like that. And that's why you see great teams. And Dr. Tom is right. It's great to win. You know, the games they've won, and they've played really well. They've dropped points in a silly way against Burnley at home, that 0-0. They had 0-0 against Swansea, you know? But that, like you said, the next, 3 weeks, we'll see what they're really made of.
I guess we will. Your doctorate, Dr. Tom, where did you take that?
I did it in Henley Business School.
Oh, right. Okay. And are they pioneers in the field of football finance as a doctorate?
No, they do a lot of finance-related research. So I actually did the MBA in football industries at the University of Liverpool.
Okay.
And then I got offered a scholarship there to do that afterwards. Yeah.
But did you? What was your thesis? Did you have to do a thesis, right, for a
doctorate? It was three research papers. So they focused on how to value a football club that you mentioned earlier on.
Right.
The other one focused on managerial performance and evaluating that versus the actual resources that you had at a club.
Right.
And the other one focused on the club valuation versus who you had at the helm. So obviously...
What? How much a manager impacts on how much money the value of the club is worth.
So, and that was tested in real life with Manchester United and David Moyes, because obviously... They were listed on the stock exchange and you could see how far they were going down in the Moyes era. So that was tested and obviously came out the right way.
Right. But you've also, I mean, part of that was studying when's the best time to get rid of a football manager, yeah?
Yeah.
All right, we'll ask you a little bit more about that very shortly. Right now, though, a little bit of this. Hey, listeners, if you haven't heard the latest edition of the Totally Football League show yet... then you won't have heard Chris Powell, the nicest man in football, talk about his time as a player and a manager at Derby, give his thoughts on whether he'll one day return to Charlton, and share his recollections about his manager at England and Leicester, Mr. Sven-Göran Eriksson.
When he was manager of Leicester, I walked into his office one morning and he looked at me. He was on the phone. He was speaking in English and he gestured at me, one minute. So he finished the conversation. As he put that phone down, there was another ring. He picked up another phone and he looked at me again and said, 1 minute. He started speaking in Swedish. Fine. Put it down again. Another phone rung. Then I realised he had something like five phones on his desk.
See.
But each one was for different countries. So in the time
was
I was in
countries?
There...
Was it countries?
Oh, it was, because then he picked up another one, steady. And he spoke in Italian. He spoke in Portuguese. And I sat there and I just thought, how good is that? I mean, how many managers will speak five languages in the space of 10, 15 minutes?
More of that in the Totally Football League show, which is available every Tuesday on Audio Boom, iTunes, or basically wherever you get your podcasts. Do you want questions or a little bit more Premier League, Mr. Jules?
I want both. Can we have both?
Well, let's have a question before we get on to the excitement and raw drama that is Crystal Palace Chelsea. Big Nick, who has the biggest feet in the Premier League?
Oh, I think...
Ibra?
No, I would say...
Fraser Forrester, possibly.
Yeah, 6'6", isn't he?
It's a big-boned fellow, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would have said Peter Crouch...
No, I don't know about that. Because I think that Peter Crouch, the way that, you know, his bone structure, he's been stretched out as opposed to just being all-round bigger. He's so... I like Fraser Forster on that. He's got that extraordinary overdeveloped bone structure that I believe. Podsy, a question for the doctor. That's you. Yeah, in the world of free spending and exorbitant transfer fees, who are the best-run clubs in Europe? Now... Dr. Tom, I think you could probably spend at least an hour talking about this. So can you just give us the, you know, bullet points?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. For me, we mentioned Spurs earlier on. I think they're very well run. I think Lille in France are excellent in terms of, I think the last analysis I did there, in eight transfer windows, they had made an average of nearly €18 million in every transfer window. Southampton is an obvious one as well, that they've been brilliant in terms of the way they've been able to turn over players, turn over managers and sustain their performance. Celtic are very frugal but well run, and when they get into the Champions League they do very well. So I could continue on.
No, who are the worst run then? Come on.
Well...
Of the big clubs,
that's a very difficult question, and you're probably putting me out of work if I start saying things
enemies?
Like that. From my debut here, I've probably created enough enemies for one day. We can talk about that off air.
Disappointed.
Sporting Lisbon's president has an idea.
Ah, yes.
I'm sure a few Italians as well.
Interesting point. He mentioned Southampton, Dr. Tom. They're taking on Newcastle. You've just helped usher in a brave new era at St Mary's with the unusually enough, Chinese takeover of the club. How is it working out, and why did they want Southampton?
They wanted Southampton mainly because of the brand of developing players. So they've obviously produced so many good players in the Premier League. So I think they want to roll out the Southampton brand of soccer schools all over China.
Really?
So that's part of the logic here.
So the notion of Southampton being a good development school is sufficiently widespread in the world that you could actually market that.
Well, that's their logic. And I've seen the planning documents, and they look very good and solid. They obviously want to bring the club to the next level as well. So I think they'll be putting in sustainable investment into the club.
Okay. Well, that's a relief. On Monday, we had a great tweet from Guy Lewis, who said, an imaginary billionaire consults you. Of course, in your case, this is probably not imaginary at all. But anyway, a billionaire consults you about buying an English and a continental sleeping giant. Which clubs do you recommend and why?
I know a couple of the guys said Newcastle. And
yes.
I completely agree with that. I think Newcastle are the club in the Premier League that have the potential to be a Champions League club every year if you get it right. So you're getting 40,000+ every week there. And we've seen it in the past for a little while in the Keegan era. But I think if you were to nail that, they were the club who could do the best.
Now, there's a lot of talk about something being in the offing for Newcastle. How far are they away from actually starting a new project themselves?
I think they're quite close.
Like weeks or months?
No. The one thing that we need to realise here is that obviously the brakes have been put on investment in football externally and internally to some extent
by China. So is that who's interested?
So they're the ones that are always sniffing around at the moment. It was a little bit like early 2000s it would be Russians, mid 2000s it was Middle East, and now we're in the Chinese phase. But in terms of who's interested, I think a lot of people have to wait for the actual Communist Party conference, which is on the 18th of October.
Oh, and next Wednesday.
Exactly. So this is a 5-year one, so it's a big one. And that will lay out what the strategic plan is for Chinese investments, both internally and externally. So a lot of the people that are interested in the likes of Newcastle and some other clubs have to wait and see whether they'll get the permission or not. And obviously, a club that's close to you, AC Milan, are on the other side of that, where they're now at the mercy of the Chinese authorities. So hopefully that won't work out in a bad way for the club, but it doesn't look great.
I've got a question for Dr. Tom. How long, for example, does it take for the takeover of Southampton from the beginning where you were involved to the completion of it?
Southampton wasn't your standard takeover. Right. That took longer than a normal takeover would. So that took about 15 months.
Okay.
But I've seen takeovers happen in as quick as, 6 to 8 weeks.
Really?
It depends. And Southampton's quite a clean club as well, but that was to do with issues over holding companies, etc.
Yeah. Is Milan the longest takeover you've ever seen? How many years was that? Yeah, the Berlusconi sale of the club.
With the current owner, it was a period of 18 months.
Right. Okay. Saints are taking on Newcastle this weekend. Shelby's in doubt after taking a knock to the head in training. Not sure if that was Rafa Benitez trying to reboot him.
Quite
or something,
an interesting narrative in this game, and that's the master against the apprentice. Ooh. In that it's Benitez coming up against Mauricio Pellegrino, who of course was a former player of his and once on his staff as well.
Very nice. I'd completely missed that, James.
There you go.
Other Premier League games this weekend include that fascinating clash at Selhurst Park on Saturday afternoon as sort of phantom football outfit Crystal Palace try and leave some form of tangible mark in the world of the living, a goal, a point, something like that, against Chelsea. I did mention before that Crystal Palace with Everton have had the toughest fixtures so far. Would it have made any difference if they'd had easier fixtures?
Well, yeah, surely. But you can't come back in the past anyway, so there's no point.
They
need to wait. After this game, it's getting easier, so we'll see. But you don't see any improvement. Even in big games, you can see improvements in teams, and you've seen in the past, but not with them. So you change managers, nothing, no changes, no improvement.
Actually, it's getting worse. In terms of goals conceded, it's almost twice under Roy Hodgson, but it was under Frank de Boer. Hey, a Palace getting taken over, Dr. Tom?
Not that I'm aware of.
But they just had a whole load of new investment come in from China, didn't they?
Well, it's Palace is a funny one because the two guys who obviously bought in there from... They run a venture capitalist fund called Apollo. It looked like they were buying to sell in a few years. So I'd say they're getting a little bit jittery with the start here because, you know, if you go down, the value of that club is probably going to go down by 100, 120 million at least.
Yeah. It's the same we saw at Hull where, you know, there's so much interest there in the takeover and it didn't get done. They've gone down. It's gone.
Sunderland also.
We did have a question, which I'm not sure who sent it in, but a great question anyway, saying, who do you think are the next big club in Europe who are going to basically do a Hull or a Leeds or just crash through the divisions?
It's a very difficult one.
Who's teetering on the brink financially?
Well, at the moment, it's AC Milan, because the future is so uncertain. And, you know, the purists, no one wants to see that, a name like that. But that looks like could be the club that it could happen to.
Wow. All right. We'll talk a little bit more about Italy later on. Going to fly through some more exciting-looking Premier League fixtures. Arsenal, after their unbeaten September, in which they didn't concede a single goal in the league. Is that right, Julia?
That's right, indeed.
They're going to be travelling north.
They've always won at Watford.
To Watford, yeah, absolutely.
Always won there.
But, okay. I mean, if Walter Mazzarri can out-coach Arsene Wenger, I mean, Marcus Silva.
2-1.
No problem.
2-1 they won when they last met, and that was at the Emirates.
Yeah.
Yeah, so what? How much is this where Arsenal's rebirth is going to come crashing to the ground?
What? How many times have Arsenal scored on the road this season? I think they've struggled, haven't they?
They've struggled a bit, yeah.
And Silva, aside from that game against City, where City, come on, I mean, one of the best attacking sides not only in the country but in Europe, have been very good at the back and find themselves only a point behind Arsenal in the league table. Watford's best start ever in the Premier League.
Mm.
So, yeah, I think this could be... I don't want to say a trap game for Arsenal because almost every game is a kind of trap game for Arsenal. Where they, but, you know, I could see Watford winning this.
Yeah, Mustafi is not going to be available. The Koscielny, Ozil, presumably out as well. Danny Welbeck should be back.
And Alexis has the same issue as all the South Americans.
Of the traveling long back, journey back. Yeah. Yeah. Also, his state of mind. After.
Yeah. As we said, he's great 2017 year so far.
Yeah. What about Callum Chambers signing the new deal, which is a bit of an odd one given that he hasn't featured? Or
it's only to sell him better, no? Surely.
Potentially. They're probably learning from their mistakes in the past.
Yeah, exactly. Mm.
That's the one to sign to a new deal, not say Sanchez or Ozil.
Not yet.
Okay. Well, it looks like Ozil is going to stay as well. That's the latest that I don't think anyone else is prepared to match his money.
United, I think.
What? Man United in for Ozil?
Yeah. Because Jose loves him.
Is that right?
Yeah, Jose loved him at Real Madrid.
Yeah, I didn't mind Real, yeah.
But I mean, you wonder where he would fit in there, particularly when you look at, you know, it's usually either or between Martial and Rashford. You know, it's they don't often play together.
No, but if you play 4-2-3-1 and you play Mkhitaryan behind Lukaku, you can play Ozil behind Lukaku as well.
Or you could do that thing that a lot of managers are doing now where you convert him into a wing back. Would that work out well?
I'm sure he runs so much and so freely.
All right.
Well, he actually covers more ground than everyone else. Yeah, remember, that's the counter argument.
Often what? For nothing.
Well, in terms of distance covered, Ozil's often at the top of the list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he just doesn't put his foot anywhere. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
He covers a lot of ground, which, you know,
yeah,
you know,
I'm just letting that sink in. Okay. Jules, you reject James's notion that this is going to be a difficult, potentially damaging fixture for Arsenal.
No, I think it will be tricky. Oh, yeah. I think they have a great record over there, but I think it would be tricky because I think Marco Silva is a wonderful manager as well, and tactically, he might well come up with a plan that will completely undo Arsene Wenger.
What would a plan that would undo Arsene Wenger look like?
Well, if Arsene Wenger had a plan first,
yes,
it would be harder to find a plan to counter it, because Arsene Wenger has had the same plan for 20 years.
So if you were Marco Silva this week, what would you do?
I would... So it's interesting because Mazzarri used to change a lot the system over there. I think they had 11 different systems in the whole year, which is crazy. Like, come on. It's crazy. Silva has brought a bit more stability tactically, I think, whether they've played 4-2-3-1 or against Swansea, he changed at half-time, which was great, I think, from what he did, from the 4-3-3, I think, to three at the back.
Mm-hmm.
I would play three at the back against Arsenal, and I would make sure that in midfield, especially with Xhaka and Ramsey, neither of them really defensive-minded enough, I think, to protect the back three, that I would had a lot of people there to exploit that weakness.
Oh. Silva's probably got his eyes on Arsenal's job as well.
Yeah.
Kapua or Kapu seems to have
Kapu, get. Please. No, you, Dr. Ton. No,
Kapu,
you.
Kapu. I stand corrected.
Thank you.
Seems to have the game of his life every time he plays Arsenal.
Is that right?
Doucouré is doing well
is
as well.
Right? Yeah. Interesting. Doucouré is doing well. It's true. And so is Richarlison, who has scored 90th minute goals in the last two games, earning the Hornets 4 points. Also, on the subject of London clubs heading north, you've got West Ham going a little bit further up to Burnley. Burnley are all the way up, by the way, in sixth. They could end this weekend in third place in the league. They're unbeaten in four Premier League games for the first time in almost 3 years. West Ham, their stats are also suggesting that they're improving. Is that just numbers being numbers? Or is there something going on there? Is there something we can build on? And Dr. Tom, I was mentioning before your studies into what is the optimum time to get rid of a manager is for West Ham as soon as you can with Slaven Bilic.
Well, we haven't run the numbers, but it looks like the writing could be on the wall there. If he doesn't turn it around very quickly, you just need to give a manager as much time as possible in the Premier League to get you to that 40 points. I think, conversely, you look at Burnley and the job that Sean Dyche has done there, incredible. Absolutely. I don't think they've got the plaudits that they deserved for the position that they're in now. You know, to have 12 points at this stage of the season is just incredible for Burnley.
Yeah, especially given their fixtures. I mean, look at the clubs they've had to go and play against. So in terms of the optimum time, I mean, was there a specific... Is there a day of the month that's auspicious or what?
It's not quite as simple as that. It's a bootstrapping model where you have to run different circumstances thousands of times. So it takes about 24 hours to run the system. I'm actually working on updating it with my PhD supervisors
at
the moment.
All right, let us know.
Yeah, so I'll keep you posted.
But were you West Ham, would you have waited this long with Slaven Bilic?
The thing about Bilic is he is a motivator and he's a proud guy and he's the type of person who would want to turn it around. So I can understand why they've held on, but I'm sure there is a deadline there internally at the club. And, you know, you look at Jack Sullivan's tweets and other signals from the club, it doesn't look great for him. But, you know, it actually wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if he did manage to turn it around because he's that type of guy. But I'd say he doesn't have a lot of time to turn it around.
Fair enough.
They're in for Mauricio Sarri as well, so... Why wouldn't you sack Bilic if you can get Sarri?
Can they get Sarri?
No way. I don't know what the guy who wrote that, whatever tabloid he was.
Well, you just repeated it to our poor listeners.
No, but to make fun of whoever that was. But
sorry.
Who in his, you know,
it's not that outlandish. Successful foreign manager from a league which financially can't compete with the money in the Premier League could be tempted away. I'm sure James, you would say that in this case, Sarri's got something else beyond money that he's earning at Napoli.
Yeah, like winning the league for the first time since 1990. So ejecting when you believe that you can do that,
and also the perfect laboratory with which to perfect his tactics.
Mm, exactly.
No offense to West Ham, but we're talking about the probably the best manager in Europe.
I love sentences that begin with no offense.
No, but we're talking about the best manager in Europe right now.
Yeah.
Probably even better than Pep, considering what he's
doing. Would you say so?
Yeah.
What do you think he's got over Pep?
Not 300 million spent in the summer.
That's a good answer.
just starting with that.
Point well made.
And like... Why, and who thought, yeah.
So how exciting is Tuesday's clash of the Pep against the Maurizio?
I think it's amazing. Mm. I just think it's amazing. I know we have you and I, James, and Jim as well, we're doing a great show on television, but if there was one time where I would watch a game and not, you know, be with you guys on that show would be
not
that
be a PSG game.
And not be a PSG game because every PSG game is amazing, obviously. It would be this one.
All right. The
second leg, because I do think, obviously, the one at the San Paolo would be even better, you know, on Napoli's point of view and Sarri's point of view, because you don't play the same, although he seems to be playing the same away and at home, but the two clashes would be great.
Listeners, if you want your face to be as smooth as the sounds here at our new home, Jazz FM, then you need to noodle on to cornerstone.co.uk pronto. Cornerstone, take all the hassle out of shaving. Let them know how often you defuzz and sign up to one of their plans and you'll never have to worry about running out of blades ever again. They'll deliver them right to your door. To get you started, head to cornerstone.co.uk/totally and you'll receive a personally engraved razor and 6 super sharp blades for just £4. That's cornerstone.co.uk/totally. Nice. Still to come in this cornucopia-esque Totally Football show, we've got James, you talking about Italy, Jules talking about France, more questions probably, other stuff. Swansea taking on Huddersfield this weekend. Swansea haven't won in four. What is Claude Makélélé actually doing there, Jules? Ask producer Ben.
He's doing a good job.
Is he?
He's Paul Clement's assistant. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they worked together before at PSG. And especially last season, I think he had a really big impact defensively on the way the team shaped up.
Which has turned around. When you look at stats, there's one thing that leaps out.
Definitely. And I think for that, he deserves a lot of credit. And this season, I think they expected it to be quite tough again. You know, why not, despite spending a fairly good amount of money in the summer for some players. Maybe they're not the right players, but that's another debate. But I think, he's probably not good enough to be a manager, as in the first team manager, like he tried in France, in Bastia, was a disaster. He's probably very good as an assistant to someone because of the knowledge he has, that position that was his position, especially in midfield, but also the charisma he has for especially younger players. But, you know, all that experience he can give is, I think he would be, he would be very, very good in the staff.
Anyways. Attacking coach, because there are three Premier League players who've had more shots on target than Swansea had as a team.
Anyway, so Swansea taking on Huddersfield, that's Saturday at 3 o'clock. Sunday, the early game is Brighton against Everton. Neither team doing particularly well at the moment. They're both on 7 points, just a couple above the bottom three. Brighton are going to be without David Proper, who picked up an injury on Holland due to Thomas Hedemed, is suspended. Everton, their run of tricky fixtures arguably easing up a little bit with this. We'll see if their performances improve, I guess. Leicester, meanwhile, taking on West Brom. That's the Monday evening game. Oh, West Brom are another team that you've helped with the Chinese takeover, Dr. Tom.
Correct.
Do you want me to elaborate on that? I don't know. Why West Brom? That's not the most obvious of choices.
It was a strange one, all right. That they'd identified, they'd done their research, and they said, OK, this is the club we want to go for.
Because Southampton have the youth academy business. What did West Brom bring to the table?
The one thing that West Brom had, and you're laughing, but they did have something that was quite unique. They were the only smaller team in the Premier League, well, outside of the Big Six, that consistently made money. Mm-hmm. So Jeremy Peace had a very, very, you know, sustainable model in place. So I think that was part of the rationale. And this was before the new TV deal kicked in, where, you know, most clubs should be able to make money.
Okay. Leicester have had their appeal to register Adrian Silva rejected. I know rules are rules, but I just find that really disappointing. Just on a human level, you know, just be human about it. There's a guy sitting in the stands. They missed it by 14 seconds. Come on, lighten up, FIFA. Let him play. A quick question from producer Ben again, Dr. Tom. Are Wolves actually going to be the top team in the Midlands in the next few years?
They look to be obviously on the march at the moment. The links to some of Europe's biggest agents isn't necessarily going to hinder their acquisition of players, so it wouldn't necessarily surprise me. But it looks like Villa, with the squad that they have as well, they're moving in the right direction now. So they do have the most potential with the history and the size of the club to be the biggest club there consistently still.
All right, Dr. Tom. In league news, because Ligue 1 returns.
Hey, yes.
Big game. Lyon taking on Monaco, but you're saying that Falcao can't take part in that.
No, Falcao, no. Jovetic being injured with Montenegro as well, which is a huge blow for them. So it'll be a very weakened Monaco side on Friday night. They played Friday because obviously then they wanted the extra day rest for the Champions League next week, where they're already in trouble after you know, losing one and drawing one. So it's a huge game for them. They're second behind PSG, but 3 points behind. So in case of a loss, again, and PSG winning, you could have a quite significant gap already. And then for Lyon, they're only eighth in the table. Bruno Genesio, the manager, under big pressure. He basically has 6 games to save his job, 4 in the league, 2 in the Europa League, where they play Everton home and away in the Europa League next week and then 2 weeks after that. And it's that or he's out. Because I personally think Genesio, I talked about Deschamps, but Genesio is even worse than loads of managers in France. I think he's dire.
What do you think about the exciting young manager who's got Nantes into fourth place, Jules?
you know what I like about Ranieri?
Claudio Ranieri for
ETC. He's boring and he's defensive.
No, but
and
he's
I don't
not
like
boring. It. His football he, might be, but he's yeah. not.
But what, you know, he saw that squad and said, okay, there's not much I can do with that squad. In fairness to him, he's right. Okay, I'm going to basically make them super good defensively. Mm. We're not going to lose the matches. We
Give
will
us
draw.
The quote, George.
And the quote is amazing. It is, you have to lock the door of the house. If you don't, the burglars come in and steal everything. Once you've locked the door, you can start decorating and organising it like you want.
All right. He's big on domestic, kind of, on house-based metaphors, I think, isn't he, Claudio Ranieri?
That's Trapattoni-esque, almost.
Yeah. I like
what
that.
What do you think? I mean, he moves his house. He moves house a lot.
That's true, actually. He would know.
Yeah.
He would know. All right. Is that sustainable, them being up in fourth place, Nantes?
Not in fourth place, but if they keep...
So no?
No, not in fourth place.
Yeah, okay.
Because I think there's a point where defensively you can't spend your whole season defending.
You're going to crumble.
You're going to crumble. Yeah. But, you know, it's going to work. They're going to have a good season.
What's your favourite crumble, James? Tom, are you a crumble fan?
I quite like a rhubarb.
Rhubarb.
My dad grows rhubarb.
Okay. Depends
grows
what
rhubarb.
You accompany it with, I would say. I mean, I like rhubarb, but only with things. Whereas a blackberry and apple crumble, you could have a la mode or just on its own.
An underrated crumble would be the gooseberry crumble.
So right. If listeners have crumble recipes, send them in because it's the kind of time of year. Cream or custard, that's pretty spent. I cheat a little bit. I go ice cream.
Of all your weird cakes that you have in this country, you know what I mean. The apple crumble is my favourite.
Oh.
Or a spurs crumble.
That's the only one.
But anyway, yeah, it's that time of year when a young man's thoughts turn to crumble. So if you have any great recipes, do let us know. Because I learnt a lot about poached eggs in the past from listeners in a previous life. Maybe we can push the boundaries of crumble in a similar fashion. Tom... A lot of people have spent a lot of time this season going, Paris Saint-Germain bought Neymar and then they are kind of bought Mbappe, but financial fair play. In 2 minutes, can you explain why PSG are able to do this when it seems to be defying all the laws of FFP?
Well, probably not, actually, but historically, I did write quite a lot of financial fair play reports, AC Milan, Barcelona, Manchester City. I'm looking at this thinking... How are they going to get around this?
So you have to be a bit of a kind of financial lawyer.
It looks like, on the surface of it, that they have obviously some sponsorship deals that are covering all of this. The interesting thing as well is that obviously beIN Sport own the rights to the globally to the French League. And from what I've been told, a lot of nations passed on those rights. And then all of a sudden, Neymar appeared. And a lot of people wanted those rights straight away. So that, from a commercial perspective, that's actually worked out well. And they're all Qatari-based companies. So I can't explain how they think they're going to get around the regs, because the regs, as I know them, I don't think they would be able to. I know that UEFA are investigating them at the moment, along with two other clubs.
Which are the two clubs?
Good question. I was trying to work that out. Well, I had a chat with someone from UEFA last week. I think it is. I think it could be both Milanese clubs.
Hmm.
So that, because I think City have their house in order in terms of how they set up City Football Group and how everything works. So that was my guess, but again, that's unconfirmed.
Yeah, I'm just looking at the sale of the TV rights abroad from Liga. And apparently the deal that they did was 2018 to 2024 was only 80 million euro, which is, I think, is a year, but is nothing compared, certainly, with the Premier League and La Liga. Yeah.
Yeah.
Even with Neymar signing.
And PSG had a meeting this week with UEFA about financial fair play. First hearing.
Interesting. Could be trouble ahead there, although there is the point by which you do reach a point by which the club is so big, is such a big draw, is so fundamental to the way you're selling and marketing your football that you cannot afford to take action against them, which is maybe what
I like with PSG.
That's a very good point. I think PSG are obviously in a position now to compete and could win the Champions League with the right draw and the players that they have. And maybe they're hoping that UEFA turn around and say, we can't kick out the champions here because we've got some of the biggest names in world football, so we'll just slap them on the wrist.
As much as I would love that to be true, I think that the other clubs are not happy. And I think that the likes of Bayern Munich and Juve would also put pressure on UEFA to say, look what they've done, you can't let that go.
Juve, who you'll be able to see on Netflix in 2018.
Oh, in the kind of behind the scenes, being Juventus.
Being Juventus.
Juve got a huge game coming up this weekend, but then everybody at the top end of Serie A has a huge game coming up this weekend. There are some big games around Europe. Talk about the French ones. You've got Atletico Madrid taking on Barcelona. That's Saturday evening in Spain. In Germany, Dortmund taking on Leipzig. That's earlier that day. That should be a really big game as well. Big injury problems for Dortmund going into that, but they are top of the table. But why, James, should people not watch Atletico Madrid taking on Barcelona and instead tune into league-leading Napoli with their incredible average of 3.11 goals scored per game visiting Roma?
Yeah, Napoli scoring more goals per game than any other team in Europe's top five leagues, more than Messi's Barcelona, more than Neymar's PSG. Mm-hmm. And
more than Mourinho's Man United.
Yeah, even them. And just a joy to watch. And I think, again, there is a will, I think, on at least the neutrals' part and, of course, fans in Naples to see this team do what it's promised to do in the last 2 years and deliver on that promise and win the league. And in order to do that, they have to go to Rome and get, I think, a win. Because we saw them do that against Lazio, maybe 3 weeks ago. But it was a Lazio team that, after going in front, suffered injuries to centre-back after centre-back after centre-back. Also, Dries Mertens scored that, arguably one of the goals of the season so far in Europe's top five leagues. But this is another test for this Napoli side, who are renowned for playing great football, but this season haven't always played great football, and they've often gone behind. But I think what they've shown, which I think is making people believe in them this time around, is that it doesn't really matter. Mm. They can go behind, and yet they can still score enough goals to win.
Right. Roma beginning to come together under Eusebio Di Francesco as well, so that's going to be a great game. Juventus, who dropped points last time out, slipping behind in second place, they are going to be hosting a Lazio side who, of course, beat them so dramatically 3-2 in the Super Cup to kick the season off. Lazio coming off a 6-1 win against Sassuolo.
Yeah, and they deserved to win that game against Juventus. They outplayed them for vast stages of that game. It was only Paulo Dybala who managed to get the Bianconeri back into it, scoring twice. And Simone Inzaghi, who was in London of the last international fortnight, because I think one of his boys lives over here, studies over here. But Inzaghi, who's done such a good job, not only last year, but obviously building on what he did last year, winning a trophy, has been linked with Juventus, even though Allegri has signed a new deal until 2020. Simone Inzaghi, yes.
Wow.
Because, he goes way, way back with Juventus' sporting director, Fabio Paratici. But you would say, on the work that he's done there, the talent he's developed there as well, where he's had to rebuild after selling some of their best players. We've yet to see, for example, Felipe Anderson even feature in this Lazio side. They lost Bilia, their captain, Keita Baldidia. Doesn't matter.
If we ever do an Italian football podcast, we can have a whole show about Simone Inzaghi, who is one of the most surprising managers. No, he's the most surprising manager in football for me right now. Do you know when the last time Lazio won away at Juventus in the league?
Was it back in the days of Sven?
And almost 2003.
Ah, Mancini.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other huge game, of course, is the Milan Derby.
Mm.
Wow. Completely transformed thanks to Chinese money, Milan Derby, because they've been slightly, wistful, nostalgic affairs of late. But this, two clubs who very much see themselves as starting, bright new future. So that's going to be huge as well. When's the Milan Derby?
Sunday night.
Sunday night. Yeah. That's great. We've not got too much time left, listeners, but those are big games. Here's a question. Ooh, here's something I wanted to mention. George Weah.
Oh,
he's been elected president of Liberia.
He's done it.
Oh, is that not? It's not confirmed yet, but reports say that he's been elected president of Liberia. What a long way that man has come. Former telephone engineer. Did you know that?
I didn't.
And
now he's been called to office.
That's brilliant, isn't it? I mean, he's been trying. He's stood so many times, George Weah. One of the nicest people, really the most down-to-earth, gentle, kind of sweet, humble people. Mm. Really nice.
Jules very excited about his son, Timothy, plays for PSG.
Yeah. Voila.
He's at the under 17 World Cup, but not for
with the US.
With the US, yeah.
He was born in New York, I think. So.
I'm glad you said that because there was a little bit of snide kind of commentary about the talent of the Weah family. Obviously, his cousin was a bit of a poor celebre.
Yes,
but
no, Timothy is very good,
and George very was good, as well. Yeah. I mean, he really was. He may not have scored ridiculous numbers of goals, but he was playing in the most defensively astute league in the world at that time.
Yeah. I mean, it's the same kind of skepticism that is shown of Ancelotti's achievements as well. You know, particularly in league football.
I mean, come on. I'd like to know. and he follows a long and noble line of footballers going into politics. Of course, Andriy Shevchenko.
Uh-huh. Gianni Rivera.
Gianni Rivera in Italy, of course. Who else you got? Pelé was Minister of Sport for Brazil.
Bebeto, Romario, both.
Oh, Romario.
Yeah. He's on there.
Yeah, Rio State Senate. Pavlyuchenko was elected as City Council Deputy in his hometown of Stavropol, says producer Ben. Oh. And, of course, then you got Gaddafi Jr., who was, I think, held a governmental role after his exploits in Italy with Perugia and then Udinese.
Yeah.
Where he managed to get banned, as we always mention, without ever taking part in a football match, which was pretty good.
Bathe in milk, I think.
Did he?
Well, I think that was the story from the porter of the hotel that he stayed in.
In Perugia?
No, in Udine.
Oh, in Udine.
Yeah. Either him or an acquaintance of his bathed in milk. Yeah.
I cannot imagine anything worse. Well, I can imagine anything worse. But it wouldn't be in my top five of things to bathe in.
No.
Crumble would be up there, certainly.
Yeah.
Milk, not so much.
Very coming to America.
I suppose it is. Who was his manager? Was it
Cosme.
Sergio Cosme?
Perugia, yeah.
Yeah, no, Cosme. But Udine, it wasn't Roy Hodgson, was it?
No,
oh, okay. Wasn't. All right, that would have been interesting. Roy Hodgson and a bath of milk offers producer Ben.
Yes.
Try and unthink that one. Dr. Tom, when's your film out?
We're currently in the process of selling it, so we're hoping to release it next May. The new edition of Football Manager is out on the 10th of November.
Oh, dear.
Why Macca hasn't been in the pod?
I haven't seen him, actually. I think he is some early access. So I think he's literally just disappeared straight away.
Mm. Imagine if you got sucked in Tronstar into the game.
That
he'd
could
never
be,
come
that
back.
Could be a movie.
A mirror episode like that. Yeah.
Is there?
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was this film, quite famous one, Jeff Bridges.
Yeah.
And light bikes.
Yeah.
No. All right. Well, listen, listeners, thank you so much for being with us today. Thanks also for Julien Laurent and Dr. Tom Markham and James Horcastle for all their talking. We will be back on Monday, of course. So just have a great weekend, everybody, and look forward to seeing you on the other side.
The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production. For sales and advertising, email sales@muddyneesmedia.com.